This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. Stand by, Murfreesboro. The WGNS action line continues a search for truth.
Good morning to you. Welcome into the Action Line from WGNS. We're going to go back 149 years today to the Battle of Stones River and special reenactments, ranger talks and walks, and special exhibits in the beautiful museum there at the Stones River Battlefield are all open to the public for the next several days. It, as always, is free. Gib Backlund is with us this morning. Gib, good morning to you.
Good morning, Bart.
And you brought a friend with you today.
This is Keith Schumann. He's sitting in for Jim Lewis, who normally comes, but we decided to pick a designated hitter today.
Well, Keith, good to have you with us today.
Thanks, sir. Good morning.
And tell us what's going to be happening at the Stones River Battlefield today, for example.
Well, today we have three ranger programs, a walk at 11 o'clock and a talk at 1 o'clock and then a driving tour at 2 o'clock. So we'll have three programs. It's a real pretty day, so we expect a lot of people to be out.
Now, as far as the walk goes today, what is the focus on the walk?
We're going to talk about the climax of the Battle of Stones River, which was January 2nd, 1863, when the Confederates attacked a Union artillery position and were decimated on January 2nd over near the artillery monument, which is along Thompson Lane north of Broad Street.
And that is the ranger walk and talk. Is that the same as the car tour, the caravan tour?
No, it's a little different. People will meet at the visitor center at 11 o'clock and then they'll drive over to the artillery monument, and from there we'll walk along the riverbank where that event happened.
So actually, you'll actually be able to walk through the area.
Right.
See what's happening.
Where it happened. Uh-huh.
Is there much left there that is reminiscent of those days?
We have some artillery pieces, and of course the monument is in place. The monument was built in 1906, and the river is in its same location, of course. But obviously with Thompson Lane and the development around there, it will look different than it did in 1863, but it is the place where it happened.
And I would guess the river obviously right now is lower than it was a few days ago. It was up in your land.
Right, it was up pretty high after all the rain in recent days. And during the battle, it was fordable. The troops could walk across the river, but it was rising.
And I think people don't realize how the river has really changed since those days. They probably had more flooding conditions.
Yeah, I think we have more flooding now. I mean, with urban development in a place, you have runoff from parking lots and hardened surfaces a lot faster, and so that's an issue for cities everywhere with water quality, and that's the case here as well.
So if you were walking along that area right now where you see Thompson Lane, Stones River Country Club, those stores that are along Thompson Lane.
Right.
If you were walking along there, here it is, 15 after 8 o'clock in the morning hours, would you be safe or would you have bullets flying everywhere?
On the morning of January 2nd, you would have been relatively safe because the Union Army occupied that position in the morning. It wasn't until late afternoon that the final attack occurred.
Right. So I was thinking more about December 30th.
Oh, okay. You're thinking of the beginning of the battle.
Right. Here we are. We're
probably wouldn't
calmly.
Have been safe to wander around with your head up.
Okay. Or it would be off.
Right. Yeah.
And so I noticed you're having a caravan tour as well. What is that? Do people pick up something on their radios and hear about the tour? Or
no, we actually have, again, for all of our programs, we meet at the Visitor Center, which is located on Old Nashville Highway. We have a new entrance to the visitor center as well. There's still the old entrance still is open, not Old Nashville, but the new entrance, Thompson Lane, so you can get there either way. But meet at the appointed time, and a ranger will meet you, and a caravan tour means that everyone gets in their cars or they carpool and follow the ranger out to various locations along the battle tour, and we stop and get out and then tell the story of the events that occurred at each location.
And so this will really take you back in time, and you can look around and see what's there now and perhaps have a feel of what's going to, you know, what it was like 149 years ago. With the new entrance to the Stones River Battlefield, have you changed any of the exhibits, any of the sites you see as you drive around the area?
We actually have. With the new entrance, we redesigned the tour road, and over the last year or so, we've placed a number of what we call wayside exhibits at outdoor locations. And a wayside exhibit is a panel that's maybe 2 feet by 3 feet or 2 feet by 4 feet that is something that you look at. It has graphics and text, and it helps you, you know, I think it helps you imagine the scene as it was. And then we maintain the landscape, try to maintain the landscape in a similar way. In fact, yesterday Keith was out cutting Chinese privet and bush honeysuckle to help restore the landscape in one location where the understory of the woods would not have had these modern day invasive plants. And so we work really hard to remove them.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go back 149 years. Here it is, Friday morning, December 30th, and walk us over the next several days until that climactic moment with the Battle of Stones River. What was it like in Murfreesboro? What was the size of our town? What was the size of the armies, the visitors who swelled the population?
All right. I'm going to let Keith answer part of that question.
Well, roughly, the city of Murfreesboro at that time was between 3,000 and 3,500 people. And when you think about the size of the two armies that are moving this way, the Confederates are already spread out loosely around the town, but by the 30th, they came into Murfreesboro and concentrated here due to the railroad and, of course, the Nashville Pike. The Union Army is moving down from Nashville. They began their movement on the 26th of December in the morning, and it takes them 4 days to reach Murfreesboro. About 43,500 men in General Rosecrans' Union Army of the Cumberland, and you know, that's a massive movement coming down three separate roads toward Murfreesboro. And when they arrive here on the afternoon of the 30th, they will meet the Confederates, line up, and you know, both sides will line up, and they will skirmish quite a bit. But when you think about this, that's about a combined number of almost 81,000 soldiers, and they're arriving in a town that only has 3,000 folks here. So almost overnight you have that massive, two massive armies here ready to do battle in these folks' backyards here in Murfreesboro.
So you basically had the population not too far from what it is right now, all right here in the area, but you had an infrastructure that was prepared to handle a little over 3,000 people. So you had problems.
Yes, sir, you did have problems. And it would be even more so during the battle, but even, you know, it was really terrible afterwards, because every structure in this town, because of the casualties inflicted by this battle, both sides lost about a third of their men here, and every structure in this town would be turned into a hospital. It would be just completely devastating to the people here.
Are many of those structures still here?
Unfortunately, they're not. I wish I could say that they were, but there's still a few here. Of course, the courthouse here on the square was here. And there's a few other buildings, but mostly they're all sites now that are left.
Well, let's continue to walk through time. We're moving into the afternoon now on Friday, December the 30th, 149 years ago. The mood is tense, obviously.
Most definitely. The two armies moved into position roughly opposite of each other. The Confederates, of course, we were just talking about the artillery monument. The Union Army put their left flank on that in that area, and they stretched all the way down to the modern intersection of Franklin Road and Gresham Lane. So that's quite a distance.
The whole army stretched from here to Gresham Lane?
Yes, sir. It's a very long line, roughly 3.5 to 4 miles long.
That had to be frightening just seeing that.
Yes, sir. And the Confederates placed their men over by, on top of the country club in Murfreesboro, what we called Wayne's Hill during the battle. And it stretched all the way down to, I guess, Pottery Barn.
Yeah, Kroger Run.
Yeah, right around that area. So two big armies. In some places, they're only about 100 yards apart. There's lots of anticipation. I can't imagine how the soldiers felt. Because they knew the battle was inevitable. It was going to happen. They moved in. They skirmished a little bit. No large-scale battle, but they did skirmish coming in close to each other. And by nightfall, they knew the battle was imminent. The bands played music in the evening. Both sides played bands, played their music with their bands. It was kind of a what we call today a battle of the bands. They're playing their favorite songs back and forth, trying to loosen that anticipation of the troops. And then they played a song called Home Sweet Home, which both sides, you know, the Union soldiers here, some were thousands of miles from home. Some of these Murfreesboro soldiers were from Murfreesboro. I mean, they're right here. Their homes are right here close to them. And both sides, they would like nothing more than to be home with their families between Christmas and New Year's. And this song really hit them in the heart. They really enjoyed hearing this music, and for a lot of these young men, it was unfortunate. This might have been one of the last songs that they would get a chance to hear, because the next morning, on December the 31st, 1862, the battle started at daybreak.
Mm. Now, we hear that during the Civil War, it pitted brother against brother, family against family. If they were fighting on opposite sides in the Civil War, would they have known that they had a close relative here, and would they have been able for some short period of time to at least embrace and share their family kinship?
I think they would have known. I don't have any doubt that not all would know, but there would be quite a few that would know, especially in a state like Tennessee where you fielded soldiers from both sides, Northern and Confederate. Here on this field, and this battle is unique in the fact that on January the 1st, after the first day's fighting, there was a lull in the fight all day long, almost. I mean, there was a little bit of skirmishing, but you had soldiers out on the field that were strewn with the wounded and dead, looking for their comrades that they had fought with the day before. And these men are out there, and they're all Americans. You know, when we think about the Civil War, they're all Americans fighting each other. And when that lull happens, they're out talking to one another. They're asking, where are you from? Where did you fight the day before? What is your regiment? They're out talking, and there's no animosity between these men. But when that day's over, and they take care of the business of getting their wounded to the hospitals and even trying to crudely bury some of their comrades, it's time to fight again.
It must have been difficult. I mean, I can't picture what it would have felt like being able to go out and talk to the enemy, I guess you could say.
Yes, sir.
And that enemy is an American just like you are, and in some cases that enemy is a relative, which makes it even more difficult. You're out there talking casually, and the next day you're shooting at each other, killing each other, just as had been done the day before. How did the leaders of both armies generate that ability? How did they do that? I mean, I can't even picture how you could do that.
It's a hard thing for us to get inside the minds of somebody from the 1860s. You know, our ability to express a lot of things is different. You know, we have so much more knowledge now about the world and about a lot of things, science, history, literature, than they would have had. And so that's I think is a problem that modern people have, is trying to get inside the heads of somebody in the 1860s, and I don't know if it's quite possible. For example, a new book came out a couple of years ago by the woman who is now president of Harvard University, Drew Gilpin Faust, but it's about death in the Civil War. It's called This Republic of Suffering. And she talks about how people reacted and treated death during the Civil War, and it's so different from the way that we treat death. It was very important for families to know that their son, husband, brother had died an honorable death. It's sort of a Victorian, I guess, a Victorian notion. They wanted to know that the son had died in a valiant and looking forward to meeting his creator kind of way. And so oftentimes the officers would write letters home to the mothers or the wives expressing how their loved one had died a very valiant way. And it really may not have been the case at all. But that was an important thing for people to feel. So the way that we treat death is so much different now, so it's hard to kind of transport yourself back into that notion. If you think about the Civil War, that time period, people dealt with the death, the wounded, in a much different way. Medicine was much different. I mean, they barely knew that soap would, or didn't even know that soap was necessary to keep from spreading infection. And of the soldiers throughout the Civil War who died, 620,000, about one-third are unknown. And we would never tolerate that today. That's not even imaginable today. But and if you go to Stones River National Cemetery, 6,000 Civil War soldiers buried there, 2,500 are unknown. So you have families all across the country who never learned that their loved one had died or whatever happened. They're waiting at home and never hear anything about that person. So again, that's a sort of a thing that we could not live with today, but they took it for granted in the 1860s.
So this, you know, this brings to mind your summertime walks through the cemetery, which not only are very moving, but you have letters from persons who actually were buried, and you're standing beside their grave, and you're reading letters from home, and that gives you a feeling of what they were thinking about. And our hats off to you for that. We're talking today about what was happening here in the community 149 years ago. The Battle of Stones River, the commemoration of that, is going on right now at the Stones River Battlefield. And how long will this continue?
The programs will continue all the way through January the 2nd. Tomorrow, on December the 31st, we will have a large group of different programs, or living history programs. Actually, they're going to differ from the ones we've been doing all week long. We'll have living historians, park volunteers, and rangers giving a whole different group of programs that will be offering not only interpretation of the battle, but also cannon demonstrations, musket demonstrations by both Union and Confederate living historians that we'll have at the battlefield. Those will start at 10 a.m. in the morning tomorrow, and they'll also have programs at 11, 1, 2, and 3, and that'll be both days, both weekend days, Saturday and Sunday.
So, and this is all free, is that right?
It is all free, and they will continue on January the 2nd, and that will be the programs that will deal largely with the actions on the last day of the battle on January 2nd. And those programs will begin at 11 a.m., and they'll also will have programs at 1, 2, and 3 p.m.
You're listening to a special tribute to the Battle of Stones River, and that is going on right now, the tribute to the Battle of Stones River, at the Stones River National Battlefield, now through Monday. Stay with us. The conversation will continue. Our guest this morning, Keith Schumann, along with Gib Backlund from the Stones River National Battlefield.
Need a new car?
Why not a truck? How about a Ford F-150 from Ford of Murfreesboro? Right now, Ford is offering up to $6,000 in rebates on F-150s, or 0% financing for up to 60 months for those who qualify. Head to Ford of Murfreesboro and test drive the latest Ford F-150.
$6,000 in rebates or 0% financing for up to 60 months for those who qualify.
Ford of Murfreesboro, on Broad at Northfield. FordofMurfreesboro.com.
Hello, I'm Greg Tidwell from Bell Jewelers. If you already own a Tag Heuer watch, let our in-house professional watch technician replace your battery and pressure test it. It only takes one day, and it's at half the price of our competition, who have to send the watch off for 4 weeks.
Hello, this is Lisa Halliburton. Have you had your jewelry professionally cleaned and checked lately? Stop in today for your free checkup.
Visit Bell Jewelers on Broad across from Toots. Family Staffing Solutions.
Family Staffing has been a fantastic experience for me. I don't know what I would have done without them.
Stay independent, at home, in charge.
They have given me hope when I didn't think there was any hope.
It's just the most involved kind of relationship, and when it works, it is so beautiful.
That's Becky Buchner with Family Staffing Solutions. Personal care assistance at its best. Call 848-6774. Online at familystaffing.com.
Roberts Discount Auto Repair on Broad, across from Ford of Murfreesboro. Honest, personal, and professional service for your car. Roberts Discount Auto Repair at 896-1407. We care, and we're here to help.
As we get ready to close out your Friday morning rush hour, Rutherford County, very happy to report, still no accidents or delays along your secondaries or along Interstate 24. You won't have any problems at all getting into the Nashville area. Now, along your secondaries, guys, please be advised, we do have lane closures at the intersection of New Salem Highway and Veterans Parkway, also at the intersection of Rutherford Boulevard and Gold Valley Drive, and between Southeast Broad Street and College Street. Turn your dream of flying into a reality by Nashville Flight Training Help. Give them a call, 366-9192, or just go online at nashvilleflighttraining.com. With traffic, I'm John Boyce for WGNS.
Let's take a look at the Murfreesboro weather, brought to you by First National Bank of Murfreesboro.
Well, a mostly cloudy skies today, a high in the upper 50s with a south-southwest wind, feeling breezy. Tonight, clear skies, low of 37. I'm WGNS staff meteorologist Mandy Feluber. Right now, it's 50.
This is Frieda Morgan at First National Bank of Murfreesboro. If you're thinking about buying a home or refinancing a home, see Becky Walker or Jonathan Bolden at First National Mortgage Services, 2230 Mercury Boulevard, an equal housing lender.
Good morning to you from WGNS. WGNS News Time is now 8:33. We continue the conversation about the 149th anniversary of the Battle of Stones River. And this is a segment where we open the phone lines. So if you have any questions about the history of the community, and if you perhaps have some comments about things that you've seen, maybe you live in a historic area, maybe your home is historic itself, or maybe there's something you've sort of found, maybe a Civil War artifact. Give us a call, 893-1450. Visiting with us this morning from the Stones River National Battlefield, Gib Backlund and Keith Schumann. Let's talk a little more about that new entrance to the Stones River Battlefield. That's going to be making it a whole lot easier for people to find you. A lot of people are new to the area, visiting here from out of town, out of state, and it probably was a challenge to find you before.
Finding the battlefield has always been a huge problem. You know, we have a lot of volunteers who work at our information desk, and over the years, people would come in, and the volunteers are just there. They're trying to help out, and the first thing they would get hit with was a complaint about how the person who's standing in front of them took an hour to find their way to the battlefield. And we worked with Mona Herring at the chamber for many years, as you know, with developing the sign program for the county. And then when the new signs, the blue signs, went in a couple of years ago, it just the change was immediate in how and people being able to find the battlefield. So we were thrilled to have the new signs. But now, with the new entrance right on Thompson Lane, if somebody's coming from the interstate, they just have to make two turns. They exit the interstate and turn left on Thompson Lane from Medical Center Parkway, and then turn left into the battlefield, and they're there. And it's been a real relief for us. And we expect that a lot of local people, I've even talked to many local people who said, oh, now I know where you are, I can come see you. and they've been living here for years and
just didn't
couldn't find their way. So we're pretty excited about that.
Let's go to the phones. Our number is 893-1450, 893-1450. Good morning. You're on WGNS. How are you today?
Mr. Walker?
Yes, sir.
This is Ural Souls.
Yes, sir, Mr. Souls. How are you today?
Fine. A few years ago, I was on the federal jury in Nashville with a man named Aubrey Lee from Hartsville, and his grandfather was living at the time of the Battle of Murfreesboro, and he said you could hear the noise from that battle clear to Hartsville, which is about 45 or 50 miles.
Wow.
Can you imagine that much noise?
I can't imagine that.
Well,
45 or 50 miles away.
Yes, sir, he could hear the noise, all those cannons. They had, the Rangers know how many cannons they had down there and all the smaller noises that a battle would create.
Mm-hmm.
But he could hear that noise clear to Hartsville, Tennessee.
Goodness
so
gracious.
I just thought I'd tell these Rangers how extreme it was.
That is, that's just unbelievable. Thank you for sharing that.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
You have a good day. Happy New Year, too.
All right, sir.
Hearing the battle that far away, I mean, that's had to be deafening if you were here in Murfreesboro.
I can't imagine. You know, just the last day of the battle here on January the 2nd, the Union Army had 57 cannons lined up hub to hub, which would stretch almost half a mile. And they fired those guns in that last section of the portion of the battle for almost an hour straight. So I can agree completely with what that gentleman said. It had to be heard for miles and miles. And
are there any accounts of people losing their hearing back then? I mean, citizens as well as military people?
We do have some written documents in our collection from the soldiers. And one quote, I'm paraphrasing, they did actually, when they were walking through the cotton fields, advancing toward the Union cannon, it was so loud they actually stopped in the middle of the fight and plucked a piece of cotton and stuffed it in their ears because it was so deafening.
We had a letter a couple of years ago when people still wrote letters from a woman who wrote inquiring about where on the battlefield her ancestor might have been when he lost his hearing.
Hmm.
And you think about it, again, what Keith was saying with the artillery firing like that, you know, a lot of injuries occurred then that were untreatable and that today we wouldn't have.
Okay, now, you have taken us through today. We're into Saturday, 149 years ago. What was the weather like then? I mean, we're experiencing some nice weather right now. It's going to be up near 60 degrees today. Sun shining. Was it that way 149 years ago?
Well, during the days leading up to the battle, the weather was not that bad. It was cold, but it did rain quite a bit on the soldiers as they moved down from Nashville, the Union Army. But the morning of December the 31st, when the battle began, there was really no bad weather. It was really, really cold. But as the day progressed, you would have the sleet and the rain and coming in late in the day, and that made it for a very miserable night for the soldiers after they had been fighting all day from daylight until dark.
Did they sleep in tents, or did they have, where did they sleep?
If they had them, yes. But in this situation, when they arrived here, all the reports and the letters or diaries I've looked at, the men were just pretty much out on the ground. They had what clothing that they had on, and they just had to do, you know, they made the best with it that they could. It was very, very miserable from all the reports that I've read of that night.
You could almost say that homeless people who are here had better conditions than they did.
I could agree in many ways with that, yes, sir.
So it's hard to envision what these people endured. I mean, and how many were there again?
Almost 81,000 men.
81,000 men enduring this cold, sleet, freezing temperatures, no tents.
No, sir.
Probably not too many really heavy coats and blankets. I mean, not for that kind of weather.
Well, I do know that the Union baggage trains were, of course, in the rear. They always followed the Army, and I do know that they did not reach the battlefield in time. So most of the men were probably not even with their overcoats, their long coats. So it would have been completely miserable.
They wore wool.
They wore wool.
By that time, it was soaked. with rainwater?
Yes, sir. Soaked with rain or mud or both, and you know, not a very comfortable situation at all.
Did they die of exposure?
In many ways, yes. Once they were wounded on the field, I mean, they're wearing that wool like we talked about, and it's muddy wool. And if you're shot with a musket ball, you're automatically infected. There's no antibiotics. So you're out in a field, you're muddy, you're wet, you're cold. You probably become hypothermic really quickly. You're losing blood, and definitely they would die from exposure during the night. And many, many men did that on the night of December 31st into the morning of January 1st, New Year's Day.
What a tragic, tragic way to go. Mm-hmm. And I know you have some displays at the museum there that shows there were more Americans who lost their lives in this war than, when you add up all of the others together, was it through Vietnam?
I think, well, even maybe a little beyond Vietnam. So 620,000. World War II, I think, was it 200,000 to 300,000 that we lost? So that was the next biggest war. But aside from that, Civil War was huge. If you were to compare the number of dead to the total population during the Civil War, and we were to have a comparable war today, it would be somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 million would die.
Let's go back to the phones. Good morning. You're on WGNS. How are you this morning?
Mr. Walker, this is Soles again.
Yes, sir.
John C. Breckinridge was the youngest vice president we ever had, and he is on the southern side, and I think he was second in command down there to General Bragg. He told General Bragg, "It's what you have ordered us to do is against all military judgment, but as my commanding officer, I've got to obey your order." And that proved fatal.
And so that was, we were talking earlier about the mindset of these people. That pretty well says it right there.
Yes, sir. He told General Bragg had ordered them to face all those Union artillerists to attack that artillery. And he told the general that it was against all military judgment, but they had to do it, so they did it, and it proved out to be fatal. I just happened to think of that and want to tell you, Mr. Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Sauls. You have a great day.
All right, sir.
Bye-bye. 893-1450 is our number if you have some historical facts you'd like to share with us this morning, or perhaps you live in an area that is rich with history. Maybe your home is one of the survivors of the Civil War. Maybe there's something there on your property that is, you know, just a living part of the Civil War. People are still finding artifacts of that era, aren't they?
No, there's no doubt about it. The area, of course, the battle covered about 4,000 acres. We actually manage today in our park about between 650 to 700 acres. Over six different units, and that's a very, very small percentage of the original battlefield. And in recent years, just, you know, seeing all the development that's happened near Interstate 24, we have people come in just about every day and say, well, you know, I found a belt buckle, or I found a button or a mini ball. And especially when all that was, you know, going on, all the construction was happening, but it still happens today. There's no telling what someone will walk in with just about every day. You never can tell.
So when we look at the battle itself, you're looking from Gresham Lane, Old Fort Parkway, that area, all the way over through the Old Fort Park, all the way down Old Fort Parkway, out Memorial to the Stones River Battlefield, including Jackson Heights Shopping Center, the avenues of Murfreesboro, all of that would have been in the impact area.
Yes, sir, it would have. And then even more so when the battle was completed. The Union Army was in control of Murfreesboro at that point. The Confederates did retreat on January the 3rd. And the Union Army then, you know, being in control of the town, took the opportunity, being here on the Nashville and Chattanooga Railroad, which was the railroad at that time, took the opportunity to build a large supply base, a strategic supply base, which they named Fortress Rosecrans after the commanding general. Now that was going to be a massive, that's one of the big strategic goals of the Army, and it, you know, this victory gave them the opportunity to build that fort, and that's going to help them supply the Union Army as they move down toward Chattanooga, eventually down to Atlanta, into the Carolinas, into the sea. And, you know, that covered 200 acres. So the whole area over around Old Fort Park was largely Fortress Rosecrans, and it was a huge area, and it stretched all the way over into some of the area of modern-day Broad Street. So
let's cover a little of the feelings of the community at that time. The battle's over. The northern troops are here. They're in control of the city. They have turned some of the churches, some of the sacred buildings in the community, they've turned them into stables, mm-hmm. put their horses in the sanctuaries, really wreaked havoc, taken over homes, turned them into hospitals, starting to destroy the community brick by brick. What was in their mind? Because we're looking back, I'm trying to put these two things in perspective. You were talking about when the battle was going on, the two sides would be out talking to each other on the battlefield, many of them members of the same family, collecting the dead, talking, sharing things, and now all of a sudden there's a victory, and the attitude seems to have totally changed. It's destruction. I'm going to tear your church down. I'm going to put a horse in the sanctuary. I'm going to, you know, let the horse do whatever a horse does.
Yes, sir. And that largely, you know, the soldiers talking to one another, that's largely on the lower level. The command is, they know what they have to do. They're going through with their strategy. They want to control this area, that way they can continue to move using the railroads. Building that fort, I've read where they took buildings down. They, you know, went through and tore fences down using everything they could in order to build pieces of the fort. It was largely an earthen fort, but they had to use wood and things to reinforce that. And, you know, I'm pretty sure the soldiers' perspective stayed the same, but those soldiers had no call in what happened during that period. I mean, you know, they're going to control the city of Murfreesboro in order to continue moving and to benefit their movement as they head toward Chattanooga.
Do you think the construction of Fortress Rosecrans, and this is often one run through my mind, because it had some need, I'm sure, mm-hmm. but it took a lot of manpower, a lot of manpower. We didn't have steam shovels and bulldozers and things like that. We're talking about men out there with shovels. Mm-hmm. Did they do all of that just so that this large number of manpower that they have, so they would have something to do? Because if they didn't have anything to do, man, that could be some some problems for the leadership, I would think.
That is true, but it was largely strategic. I mean, they took different details of the soldiers, and they would work them around the clock. Actually, with this battle, is also unique in that the Emancipation Proclamation went into effect on January the 1st, 1863, and that would free the slaves in areas of rebellion. Now, Tennessee, at that point, in Murfreesboro, since the Union Army had won, was not actually in rebellion right at that moment, but the slaves of the area flocked to the Union Army now as free Americans. So they also helped work on Fortress Rosecrans. You know, they're now free Americans earning a wage, working for the Union Army, building that fort along with the soldiers, and it takes them 5 months to build that with pickaxe, shovel, and wheelbarrows. And just the crude tools we wouldn't imagine using today to do something of that size. I mean, the fort was about 14,000 feet of earthworks, and they're all between 12 to 16 feet tall. Massive works that would take a long time to do, and I couldn't imagine being tasked with something like that today when we would think of just going out and renting a backhoe or a bulldozer and putting something like that up. It took these folks 5 months to build an earthwork of that size.
I don't think people these days realize how large Fortress Rosecrans was. I mean, you drive by the old Fort Park, mm-hmm. and you think, there's Fortress Rosecrans.
We have about, of that 200 acres of the fort, we have about 26 acres, mm-hmm. 28 acres today. Mm-hmm. And Keith said that there were 14,000 feet, about 3 miles of earthen walls built. Mm-hmm. And right now there's only about a half a mile of all of those walls left. So about a sixth of the whole thing is left. But if you went to Broad Street,
okay,
and Toots would have been at one corner, and Hooters would have been at a corner. It was a six-sided fort and had what we call redoubts inside. There were four mm-hmm. redoubts. Those are interior forts that had walls built around them. The only redoubt that remains is Redoubt Brannan, which is on West College Street. And we have a trail and a boardwalk, so you can see what a redoubt is like. And these things were, you know, designed, the walls were designed and sloped in such a way that they would reduce the ability of shots being fired in from bouncing around inside the fort and would catch the earthen, because earlier in the war we discovered that brick forts just wouldn't work anymore because artillery can destroy a brick fort fairly quickly. These are earthen forts and they absorb the shots.
Good morning, you're on WGNS. How are you today? Hello? Okay, didn't catch that one. When you call in, we will put you on hold, and we're going to, when we do that, we wait until we finish whatever topic we're talking on before you go on the air. So if you would be a little patient when we put you on hold, 893-1450. We're talking about what it was like here, right here in Murfreesboro, 149 years ago. 149 years ago, the Battle of Stones River was going on. At this time, tension was heavy. I mean, if you had turned back the time on December 30th, the tension was very heavy. This was not the place to be. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment.
Southeastern Tire of Murfreesboro has the right tires for your vehicle. Perhaps you're a rugged individual who enjoys off-roading. They have a tire for you. Or maybe you're a rap star driving around on 26-inch rims. They have a tire for that. You're a mom who's in the carpool lane daily. They have a tire for your minivan. Let's say you're a wealthy trial lawyer who drives a Lamborghini. Yes, they have a tire for you too. Maybe you drive one of those new electric vehicles. Hey, they have a tire for you. Southeastern Tire Service has a tire for every personality. They're on Broad Street, a tire or two away from Chevy of Murfreesboro.
It's really been a pleasure serving you this year. We sincerely appreciate your business, and we look forward to working with you again next year. Have a great holiday season. Heritage South Community Credit Union.
839 West College Street, next to Chewy's.
The gift you get from giving, not the one you receive.
Weather Eye.
Well, mostly cloudy skies today, a high in the upper 50s with a south-southwest wind, feeling breezy. Tonight, clear skies, low of 37. I'm WGNS staff meteorologist Mandy Thaluber. Right now, it's 50.
Maybe you need a new mattress. Well, you can look all you want, but you won't find anyone even close to the prices of mattresses at Bell Furniture. And these are Jameson mattresses. Listen, Perry Bell has the Jameson Marriott mattress. The one used in the hotel. If you check around, the queen size set is $12.99, but at Bell Furniture, just $7.99. Bell Furniture, 1517 the New Nashville Highway, halfway between Murfreesboro and Smyrna.
There is no safer place in the storm. Talk Radio WGNS, Murfreesboro, FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, TV 11.
Gib Backlund and Keith Schumann are with us this morning from the Stones River National Battlefield. We have a few calls here, so let's take some of the calls. Good morning. You're on WGNS. How are you today? Good morning.
You talking to me?
We are. Good morning.
Okay. Did that war pull on out to, Tennessee Boulevard and Maple Street and Walnut and Church Street? Did that war pull out that far?
Well, the Battle of Stones River didn't reach into the town until after the battle was over. The Union Army moved into town and occupied the town. But earlier in July 1862, there was a fight around the courthouse, and that was what was known as Forest Raid. Nathan Bedford Forrest came into town. That was the town was occupied by the Union troops, and they fought downtown, and Forrest captured the courthouse, July 1862.
Guess what I found in my backyard? You wouldn't ever know what. You couldn't name it.
What
is it? I doubt it, unless you was out there with it.
What was it?
You want to guess?
You found a musket ball.
No, sir.
What did you find?
I found a pair of false teeth.
Oh, wow.
Why do you think they're from the Civil War?
Well, I don't know. They fought in our backyard, I imagine.
Yeah. They could have lost those.
I imagine they camped in our backyard. I don't know.
I bet you they did.
Yes, sir.
Interesting.
Yes, sir. Y'all have a good day, then. Happy New Year to both of you.
Happy New Year to you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Good morning. You're on WGNS. How are you today?
Yeah, is this me?
That is you. Good morning.
Hey, Bert, I heard Rachel talking about them plants out there, and I know that down that one trail they have over there, they got some goats, and Joel Beats and I were down at City Cafe talking about that, and we were wondering about, we call them bush goats. They eat, you know, plants and things that ain't supposed to be, and we got around the houses, we call them bush plants because they hedges people make out of them. Mm-hmm. And we were wondering if the Park Service would allow us to use their goats to get rid of some of them plants, because we talk about some of these buildings, they might have some artifacts behind them, but we can't get to them because of them plants, and they know we ain't supposed to have them plants. Is there any way we can do that?
What about it? Because I'm glad he mentioned that. Mm-hmm. Come to think about it, I have seen goats in some federal parks that they use for that.
That's right. In fact, even at Stones River, once upon a time, I think it was in the 1980s, we had goats that were fenced in certain areas to eat the Chinese privet. Mm-hmm. And that was an experiment. It didn't last too long, but I know that in some other areas, like Devil's Tower in Wyoming, they've brought in, I think it's goats to eat an invasive plant that is located out there as well. And so we're trying all kinds of things. As you know, well, you may remember when Redoubt Brandon was covered with kudzu.
Mm-hmm,
nowadays we use chemicals and mechanical means. And goats are one of those mechanical devices that you can use to eat privet or kudzu or whatever.
So do you think we're going to start seeing goats again?
I don't know if we will. We got Keith. We're going to have Keith out working.
Keith,
so.
The human goat.
Yes, sir.
The goat man. Good morning. You're on WGNS.
Hey, good morning. I had a quick question. My grandfather did a lot of research for our family and found that we had three ancestors that were with the 17th Tennessee Infantry. And I was wondering if you could tell me where they might have been fighting. He told me somewhere between, like, near Overall Creek, but I didn't know if you had any more information there.
Okay, 17th. Well, Thank you.
I can't tell you off the top of my head, but we have online on our website, NPS, for National Park Service, .gov/STRI, we have maps, and you can go on and see, look for the troop movement maps, and it shows the location of various regiments throughout the battle, and we also have one for sale at the visitor center, so we could easily figure that out. And by looking at that, you can also look on our website. We've got all of our archives, not almost all of our archives, scanned and online, and you just go to History and Culture, and start digging around for regimental files, and you'll find where that regiment fought. Or come by the Visitor Center, we can show you on a map and tell you how to get there.
And we have about a minute left in the program. What can people be doing? They need to come over there between now and Monday, the end of the day Monday.
Yep, and we're open all year long. You can come anytime, but we have a lot of programs going on this weekend, living history programs where we'll tell the stories of infantrymen and artillery. Artillery is cannon, so we'd love to have folks come out. With the new entrance, the traffic is rearranged, so if you've been out before but haven't been out since we've remodeled the parking lot, be patient. You'll find your way. We'll help you get parked, and we'd be happy to see folks out. It's going to be a great weekend.
Our special guests today, Gib Backlund and Keith Schumann from the Stones River Battlefield. Now through Monday, the commemoration of the 149th anniversary of the Battle of Stones River. Thank you for joining us.